Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How are your elbows? Tell me about them. What are they up to?
Yeah, I don't know if I regret even talking about them and then publishing it on a podcast.
No, it's fine. Express your elbow concerns and elbow love. People out there, free the elbow.
Look, I don't know what it is. I think there's something where, you know, when it's about to rain, they're fine. But when the weather's, you know, quite, you know, warm and sunny, they just completely dry out, almost like, you know, the elbows are the barometer of the body.
Their elbows are the barometer of the body.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's amazing. Like a barometer, like a weather vane.
Exactly, yeah. Basically. That's what your elbows are, yeah. Because that's how they test babies' baths, isn't it? Anyway.
That is true, actually.
What I've been doing to counteract the dry elbows is putting a little bit of chapstick on them.
That is so strange.
Is it?
Why don't you just get some cream? Like, go get some Vaseline body lotion or something. Lather your elbows with it.
Chapstick's just the thing I've got handy. And actually, it's a bit of a problem because it's so small that I just keep not having enough for my lips because I've smeared it all over my elbows.
God, how big are your elbows? Well, how much of these chapsticks are being wasted on your elbows?
Where does an elbow start and end, really, you know?
I don't know. I'm not sure. That might be one for the people listening at home, I think. Where does your elbow start and end?
How do you measure an elbow?
How do you measure an elbow? for those people not familiar with Rent, the musical.
All our listeners will be familiar with Rent, the musical.
Definitely.
Don't worry.
All our listeners will be familiar.
Well, should we get on with this episode?
Get on with the episode. Is never going to get tired, that theme song. It's a classic. It's an instant classic.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, you say that. We're already how many episodes in? This is probably number 4 now, I think.
Yep.
And by the time we get to the end of Pop Stars, how many episodes? I think we've got 14 episodes of Series 1.
Yeah, 14 or 15 or something, yeah.
Yeah, and then we're probably going to go straight to Series 2.
What are you going to get rid of this theme song and make another one that's more appropriate for the next series?
No, I just think that maybe we're going to be sick of it. But
look, I don't think that that's very fair to your songwriting capabilities. I actually think it's a classic. And in years to come when, you know, Reader's Digest magazine or Innovations magazine puts out top 50 greatest podcast theme songs of all time, I don't think it is too much of a stretch to say that Fruity Alexia will actually be up there.
Oh, good. Well, that's very kind of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And once we've done Series 2 of Pop Stars, do you have any ideas for what we want to do after that?
I was thinking about this. There was a really great, really bad Australian reality show. It was an early dating one. It was called Temptation Island.
Right.
That was really good.
that's gone on to be like a bigger brand, hasn't it? Like, is it still going now?
No, I think it's sort of been probably been changed up into different formats and stuff. Yeah. I also loved the first series of The Mole because it was filmed in Tasmania.
The Mole.
The Mole.
Was it filmed in Molesworth? Is that why they called it The Mole?
No, I thought it was filmed in – wasn't it filmed in Richmond? Wasn't there a bit of it in Richmond where they went through the maze at the very end?
Oh, probably. I think they were, you know, using all of Tasmania's delights to show on screen. Yeah.
So I think that'd be good. And also, you know, there's so many really great, like – even if they're not Australian, like there was this really great, now very problematic, reality show many years ago in America. It was like a dating show, and it was featured a girl whose name was Teela Tequila.
Teela Tequila.
Yeah, and she was bisexual, and it was very problematic now, you know, in hindsight.
Yeah.
In terms of how they basically objectified and pitted people against each other, and boys versus girls, and girls versus boys, and it was I think it was called In Love with Teela Tequila or something like that. It was really, really good. She was fabulous.
There was that awful one as well. What was that called? There's something about Miriam. I think we don't touch that one with a 50-foot. There's something about Miriam. Pole.
That's right. Yeah. Isn't that dreadful? We should look at that and we should examine.
Yeah, I don't know if it needs the. Does it need the airtime? I don't know about that one.
It doesn't need the airtime, but maybe we need to shame some people.
Yeah, okay.
You know I love nothing more than to shame people.
It's true.
If I can shame somebody or call them out, I will so do it.
Yeah. This is what I live with everybody listening at home, just so you know. He's not kidding. Well, it was quite a good episode of Popstars this week, did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I actually really like this episode.
It's funny because we're almost to the point now where I think – they're about to reveal who the band is, and we're only sort of four episodes in. That feels so weird.
It is quite strange to think that there were so few episodes in this audition period, because it, you know, my memory of the whole time was that actually this part went on for so long. But actually, four episodes, and they're going to announce them next episode, pick them next episode or whatever. It's crazy how quickly it's gone.
It's quite exciting, and I just can't think what they're going to do for the next few episodes. But, you know, that's why everyone's come along to listen, right? So I shouldn't talk about it.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, let's get into it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so this week opens with some problems with Cherry Weston Pierce, one of our favourite contestants, of course. Nerves are getting the better of her as pressure mounts in the competition. The judges can't agree on what to do with her. Meanwhile, the remaining 17 contestants are singing Empty Room on repeat to the point of distraction. I never want to hear that song ever again. The auditions continue and we see the stress of the judges affecting the mood in the room.
Sure. They
let a few contestants know they're out of the competition in some really awkward exchanges in what looks like a corridor or a stairwell or something like that. And then it's the final audition day. We're still in the big hall, the town hall in Newtown. The contestants get split into three groups of five. They go off to wardrobe and get dolled up for the final performance / final audition, I suppose. And the performance happens to a massive crowd of 17 people in a humongous empty room / town hall. And the judges panic about having to make a decision. In the end, they whittle it down to 10 contestants and they, instead of announcing it there and then, they decide to send everyone home while they deliberate on who will become the first winners of Pop Stars Australia. Alexia. So.
That was a pretty good recap.
Oh, thanks.
It made me think of a whole bunch of things I wanted to mention as well. So, good recap.
Okay, good. That's good. All right. Well, let's get into it then. I thought, because the episode sort of starts with Cherry Weston Pierce, who's clearly just having a bit of a nervous moment to herself out in the corridor while everyone else is still working.
Well, she's really young, and I think they said in the episode before it's her first time away from home. And it could be really scary when you're in a big city and, you know, you're away from everybody you know.
Yeah, and you're on TV and you're being judged constantly.
Yeah, that's right. And then the nature of what you're doing as well. So I think it's a multi-layered experience for Cherry.
Yeah, and it doesn't really focus on what's wrong with her too much, but it's more about how the judges are dealing with her having to leave the room. And it seems like Jackie O's gone to console her a little bit and find out what the problem is.
Yeah, I have to say, like, watching Jackie O do it, I just thought, God, that poor woman, you know, well, she herself was a young woman and, you know, she's sort of sent there to, because I guess she's the woman, so she's sent to kind of console Cherry. Michael and Chris just sort of stand there and kind of, you know, Jackie comes up to kind of talk about, you know, what's going on with Cherry. And after they've had their little chat, Michael and Chris just sort of send Jackie back as if they can't go and do it, but off you go, lady, you go. And she kind of comes down the stairs and I notice when, this is Jackie O, when she's coming back to talk to the other guys about Cherry, you know, she kind of looks at the camera or maybe the people behind the camera, like the director or the producer or whatever, almost in a way of like, you know, does this need to be on camera kind of thing? It was kind of this uncomfortable like moment. Well, not uncomfortable, but like now in hindsight, uncomfortable moment where like, should this even be on camera? Because in the end, you know, when we don't really find out what Cherry's issue was, maybe that's why, because Jackie didn't really want to talk about it.
Yeah, fair enough.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that all makes sense. But, you know, to the other two judges, they both seem quite angry about it.
They seem so furious. They're so, so angry.
Yeah. I think Michael Napthali is worried about time and Chris Morris is just having a hissy fit, really. Like, he's there going, you know, it's been 20 whole minutes. It's not fair on the other girls, you know. And it actually makes Michael Napthali look slightly more compassionate and sympathetic.
It does. Yeah, Michael Napthali kind of comes out of this the slightly more measured person, you know, out of that duo this episode in that moment. And I think it's partly because at this point when they're about to sign the final five, you know, I guess it's over to the recording company, you know, over to Warner. And so Chris Moss is like, you know, time is money. And that's kind of like a first glimpse, I think, of what the ultimate girls, the ultimate chosen girls have to go through. You know, it's that time is money thing. And you can, you know, we know now how punishing the schedule was for the actual members of the band and what they had to go through after they won the competition and filmed the rest of the show and went on to embark on their tour and everything. So it's kind of a bit of a sign of the times there. And, you know, poor Cherry, she definitely wouldn't have coped if this is how she's coping with, you know, with the auditions. But then again, as I say, she was like a young girl.
And it's funny though, because it's funny that they don't just go, well, she's out, you know, because clearly they wanted her to come back. So I reckon she was up there as one of the hot contenders, you know.
Do you think so? See, I was thinking about this too. Like, they don't just chuck her. They let her come to them to speak to her, to speak to them about, you know, whether or not she wants to go. And I think Jackie O says something to her like, so are you going to go? Like, as if it's already been a conversation that's been had off camera.
Right, yeah.
That was an option pitched to her or pitched to them by her. And so I was thinking, was it because they really loved her as one of the ultimate members of the group, or was it that they just really wanted to string it along from a television production point of view? Because, you know, she doesn't make it to that final cut of people because, as the narrator says, she disqualifies herself or whatever he says.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, if she doesn't make those final sort of group songs where they all sing Empty Room, maybe it just is, you know, it was a moment in time that they've just fleshed out with all the editing.
Yeah.
And that's what it kind of felt like to me.
To be honest, they've spent so much time talking about her storyline and she, you know, she decides to leave on her own terms. And I feel like after she's gone, they don't, there goes their only interesting B story, you know.
That's right. This was like this was totally the only thing that had a story arc to it. And now she's fucking off home.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
Yeah. Poor Cherry. But, you know, if Cherry, you're out there and you're listening, we'd actually love to have you on to, you know, interview you, so get in touch.
We would love to, and we would also love to know if, like, at the end of your time on camera, you say that you're going to go home and get everything pierced, this, that, and everything pierced.
Oh, that's right.
We want to know what you got pierced.
Yeah.
So drop us a DM, Cherry, if you're listening. I'll tell you something about Cherry.
Yeah.
I went on a bit of a Google of Cherry. She is now an actor.
All right.
And she's got a Facebook page and she's got, I think, some credits on IMDb.
Yeah.
And one of the credits on Facebook isn't actually bad.
All right. Like a Water Rats or something? No, that's probably too early.
No, I think it's like a little indie movie or like a little short or maybe used as like an audition piece. But, yeah, she's actually not bad. It's not a bad piece.
All right.
I'm not saying Australia? Kate Blanchett level, right. But I'm just saying it's, you know, it's not bad.
Yeah, but it's not like she's run off to Hollywood. It's like an Australian sort of
thing. Yeah, it's like a little Aussie thing.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's good to hear that she's still, you know, out and about and, you know. Could you see any piercings in the clip?
Do you know, I was just thinking you're going to ask me that. I don't think so.
Maybe it's a repeated pattern. Every time she turns up for a job, they just go, look, I really like what you did. Do you mind just taking all the piercings?
Get it out.
Yeah, and then as soon as she goes home, she has to, you know, make sure there are no magnets around.
Re-pierce
while she gets
herself.
Redressed, yeah. Yeah. And then actually, aside from the little spat at the beginning, there wasn't a whole bunch of judge stuff in this episode. It was sort of more about the contestants. But I did spot, like, quite near the beginning, there's this little shot where they're all watching. All the judges are sitting on the stage in the town hall watching everyone, and Anna Kyprios kind of goes to the others. You know, Katie Underwood, she's someone who's never had a dance lesson in her life and she's absolutely nailing everything, you know. So,
well, it's true.
Yeah.
You know what it is? Katie and a couple of them, Belinda and Tiffany especially, these, you know, the three of the girls are getting the band in the end. You know, you can actually really, really see that they are, like, finishing their moves.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the big thing with, like, pop dancing and girl group dancing and you know, boy band dancing. You know, even in a little bit later when you see them all go into their separate groups and sing Empty Room, Sophie of her group is the only one that sort of finishes her moves. And, you know, maybe these people are not going to go on to be, you know, Rudolf Nureyev or Mikhail Baryshnikov ballet dancers, but you can kind of see that there are some of them that just clearly have that understanding of what is actually required, the sharpness of the dance move, the actual extension of their arms and really finishing it off. So they get the showmanship of it.
Yeah, like committing the movement to every beat, you know.
And there are some of them that are just trying to be a little bit more fluid and casual and more sort of sexy and sensual. But, you know, I think we could all probably know now that the veil has been lifted because of reality television, we're able to see that, you know, sexy things on TV are rarely actually sexy in practice. You know, in actual real time, sex scenes and dancing and sensual moments are very rarely sensual and sexy.
Yeah.
And I think you can kind of see that in this. It's a good
it's about accuracy, isn't it? It's like hit your mark on the beat and that's
exactly
what a good dancer is.
Exactly,
know?
Exactly.
And there's, you know, this weird, I suppose we do see the judges a bit as they're letting, I think they let about let 8 people go in this episode, I think, but it's all done like standing in this little corridor. And you do kind of see, I think you spot, there must be 2 camera operators because you see like a couple of different angles, I think.
Well, so I was thinking about this, like it is weird. I couldn't quite figure it out. Like they started the day with 17 girls, right?
Yeah, or 18 including Cherry, I think.
18.
Yeah.
And then they take it down to 13 at the end of the episode, but they only chuck out 3 girls and they have 3 groups of 5. So if they had 18 and they chucked out three girls, you see them knock back two girls plus Cherry Carls herself. That takes him down to 15. Then they have three groups of five sing.
Yeah, but then they chuck another five, don't they, at the end?
They must.
I forgot that bit.
Well, maybe they do, but then I'm not sure if it's just like the narrator and how it's kind of paced. Maybe I misunderstood it, but I feel like the numbers were off throughout the episode
until
the very end when, of course, there's 10.
Yeah, and they do that big sort of montage of like
the 10 of them.
And then we're down to the final 10 and they say everyone's names and have like this most awful, god-awful still that they've pulled from the VHS tape of everybody.
I mean, if I was Sophie Monk, I wouldn't want to speak about pop stars ever again just because of the still they used in that scene.
Yeah. Is she blinking? Or?
No, her mouth is kind of like half open, like... Rah.
Yeah.
I mean, none of them are very flattering stills.
No. And one of them's randomly, she's at the beach or something. That's so weird. Anyway, it was, you know, very low production values in this
episode.
Very
low production values. And also the other thing too, by the end of the episode, I know we've sort of jumped to the end now and we'll go back to where we were, but at that final scene where there's the 10 of them, where they say who they've picked, we've not even heard of three of them, two or three of them. Like not even a whiff of them.
Yeah, one of
so
them.
It's quite strange.
I had to like stare at her, but I think is one of them the one who was giving Katie Underwood the headlock at the airport in the last episode? It's not Louise. Something?
Oh, yes, sorry, yes, it is. Yes, but in the end of it, yes.
Yeah,
Louise Messenger or something.
Yeah, something like that. And then there's one of them's like Lee Shorten. Who
Lee Shorten?
I think,
she goes on to do Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, she's one of the Pop-Tarts, isn't she? Yeah, but you don't meet them really properly during
they talk about another one called Jodie Joy Smith and you never even hear of her.
Yeah.
And of course you get, you know, the girls we know, Chantelle, Sophie, Katie, Belinda.
Yeah.
And Sally.
Whoever the other one is, yeah.
And then you get Tiffany, of course. I mean, no disrespect to Chantelle. I don't know how they didn't pick Tiffany from the beginning.
That's true.
We should talk about this next episode, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I have in my head that maybe they talk about it in the next episode.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, like talking about the mix rather than the individuals.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, to that, okay, so then maybe I'll be validated with my why didn't they just pick Tiffany from the outset sort of situation. But, you know, to that point, you know, as we've already talked about and we've already identified that they're really just retrofitting a girl band here. They have the songs, you know, Empty Room is, you know, goes on to be the B-side on the single for Poison. Mm. So they already are, they have all the songs in the can. They're just trying to retrofit all the voices, all the personalities. They're really looking specifically for those different identities to kind of emulate the Spice Girls because that was part of the success of the Spice Girls was that everybody could relate to one of them. And, you know, you'd like all of them or, you know, you'd have one that you really related to. And that was something they really wanted to emulate here with these girls. You know, they weren't looking for like, you know, the TLC, En Vogue, those or Destiny's Child, which was out at the same time. All these girl bands, everyone dressed the same.
Yeah.
They were all in, you know, the same look. Whereas, you know,
you want
Spice
the,
Girls.
You want Bardo, the Ninja Turtles sort of vibe, separately. Don't you? You know, Leonardo is the leader of the pack. Donatello
exactly.
does machines. Raphael's, what did Raphael do? He's cool but rude or something.
Eats
and then Michelangelo was the party dude. So you need
exactly.
the. Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much, you can see that. And so by the end, when they've got those 10 people, it's the 10 choices for the finals. I don't know if Cherry would have fitted into that. Because whose voice would, because it's not just about look, it's also about voice. Like whose voice was she going to replace?
It's true. Do we hear much of her singing? I can't quite remember now.
We hear her in the first episode. We heard her sing.
Oh, yeah. God, it feels like so long ago since episode one of Fruity Alexia.
Because we saw her sing and we saw her tongue piercing, remember?
That's right, yeah.
As she sings.
Oh, yeah, and she's lisping. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we do. Anyway, they do lose a few of the clingers on that don't quite make it to the final 10. And I think one of my favourites, she's sort of, and, you know, I'm not the most, what's it called, articulate person, as proven by the sentence that I'm trying to say now.
Good job.
But she's being interviewed in the street outside the, like, back exit.
With a cigarette and a lighter in her hand.
Yeah, exactly. And she's just been eliminated and she says, I just seem to have an aura of being like too original and that makes me detached from the group. And
it's like, very, very strange when you hear her out the back of this town hall. You know, she's obviously out there having a bit of a fag.
Yeah.
You know, the only camera operator or one of the only two camera operators has gone out there with her, presumably for their own fag break because, you know,
yeah.
Why else are they out there? They've got so much stuff to film. And it's later in the evening because it's nighttime when she's out there smoking. And I don't know, when she sort of talks about being detached from the group, she kind of raises her eyebrows as if she's kind of, you know, skeptical of the whole thing. And again, this is somebody we've never seen really on camera before this moment. So it's a weird moment that's been given to this contestant, this auditionee who we don't really have any relationship to at all. It's really quite strange.
It could
strange.
Have just been a random vox pop on the street or something.
Literally could have been anybody on the street. They stopped, excuse me, could you pretend that you were auditioning for us and say this?
Yeah.
It was so strange.
I know.
You know the one that I loved, the girl that I loved who they actually got rid of? A really fabulous girl. Her name was Natalie, I think it was Natalie Richards or something.
She
a Queensland girl and an opera singer. She was opera trained or
something. Oh, yeah, she was fun, wasn't she?
She was really fun. She was really beautiful and I thought she was really great. And I think actually she's gone on to be a singing teacher herself now and she – or maybe I might be wrong, but she I think she has and she's actually got some really great videos maybe on her Facebook or her YouTube. I went to have a bit of a stalk of her.
Yeah.
And she has some really great covers that she's singing, playing the piano. And so it's nice to see that some of them who really were connected to music and all that, you know, their craft, you know.
Yeah. I felt like with her, they said that it wasn't that she was bad, it was just her voice was more music theatery rather than poppy. So it wasn't
well, I guess I think they really had to fit molds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I kind of get that, you know. Wasn't quite right for her, but
it wasn't,
you know,
personal.
Still,
it wasn't that she wasn't any good. It was just that it wasn't that some of them weren't any good. It was just that they weren't right for what the role was they were casting, really.
Yeah, and she takes it very graciously, I think.
Yeah, off she goes.
Not like our friend in the alleyway. Now, so they're sort of down to the final 15 and this is where they split them into little groups and actually none of the five groups are what ends up being the five winners. So I wonder if they were thinking other things.
I did think that was interesting. None of them end up being the five that ultimately get the gig. But I wonder if they had already, you know, sort of tagged each of the girls with kind of a character or
that's
like
what I thought
a role. And they've gone, okay, well, let's say, you know, role one, role two, role three, role four, role four, five.
Hmm.
Or, you know, personality A, personality B, personality C, whatever.
Baby, Ginger, Posh, Sleepy and Doc, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, Baby, Ginger, Posh, Sporty, Scary.
Yeah.
And they've kind of gone, okay, well, here are the 15 girls. This is how they each drop into that kind of mold. And, you know, you can see that Belinda and Tiffany get put into a group together, and they stand next to each other and they're fantastic. But obviously, you know, Tiffany doesn't get chosen straight up. Chantel and Sophie are put next to each other. And we know that obviously what happens there. And Sally and Katie are together. Not next to each other, but they're one person apart, I think.
I mean, well remembered.
Yeah, I think I say that now without actually checking. But, yeah, so it is interesting. So they are in groups kind of with people. Maybe there's some kind of mix of chemistry there that maybe the judges can kind of see. But I really love this. This was kind of the bit that I remembered of the show before we started doing this podcast was all this behind-the-scenes stuff. It was so exciting to be seeing, you know, for the veil to have been lifted for us to see how this world happens, you know. And I think Jackie O kind of says at one point, you know, there's not going to be any judging today. Nobody's going home throughout the day. There's not going to be sort of anyone pulled aside or sent home. It's basically going to be go, you split into fives, go, hair and makeup, wardrobe, do your performance, and then at the end of the day we'll let you know.
And this is one of my favorite parts actually, because they do like this stylish montage also they're trying to do, which, you know, I don't even quite know how to describe it, because I think what they were going for was Clueless, you know, when they get Brittany Murphy and they're washing her red hair down the sink, and then, you know, Alicia Silverstone was her name Cher?
Cher.
You know, has a little computer that picks outfits for you, and, you know, What's there's a I Wanna Be a Supermodel?
I Wanna Be a Supermodel.
Yeah, I like classic, wonderful 90s montage.
It's fantastic.
Whereas in Popstars, they're sitting in what I mean, it looks like a Year 11 media project.
It does.
Can hear the echoey sound of the rehearsals going on in the background, and there's some pervy teenager behind the camera, like in the ladies' toilets with them. And they're literally sitting on those public, like slatted public pool changing room, slatted wooden bench things.
Yeah, exactly.
And doing the mascara over the sink. I don't know. It's not what I expected.
It's quite crass, isn't it? It's very crass to think that, you know, they've probably just gone, you know, brought in a rack of clothes and they basically said, you know, what fits you, what fits you, what fits you. Now go and do your makeup. I love that there's one scene where they have some kind of hair or makeup artist, or sorry, wardrobe person sort of saying, oh, I really love it how this, you know, she looks great with her shoulders and her neck exposed.
Yeah.
You know, she really suits this style of garment or whatever she says.
Mm.
And it's like, babe, come on, as if any of you are actually putting any time and focus into these poor girls. You were literally just dressing them up, slapping lipstick on them and sending them out there to their death. That's pretty much what it is, sending them out to fight to the death. It's so strange. And I think at one point Michael Napthalai refers to them as being in competition with each other or competitors. And I just think that's kind of a crazy thing to think. Like, it's so weird because it's to think that they're kind of, I mean, they are in competition for roles and for jobs, I guess, but to pit them against each other is just so icky. And later on, just on this point, you know, having seen that little glimpse of the hair and makeup moment, the montage, later on there is one of the girls who gets ousted. She actually goes into the back into the sort of the holding area, and one of the girls goes, oh, well, at least you won't have to cut your hair now.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I was thinking, I wonder if more has happened that actually wasn't shot or that wasn't aired, because obviously they've had conversations with some of these girls like, well, sorry, you're going to have your hair cut.
Yeah, going to have all your teeth knocked out and put in some dentures so you can't
You know, and then that made me start thinking the three groups of five, were they actually the three groups that they were hoping would ultimately be the ones that worked, and that's why it's so hard to decide who they ultimately pick? Did they actually do three ready-made groups kind of going, all right, well, we know one of them's going to stand out, and then none of them did, just individuals did, so they had to henpeck and pull them out and make a group of five?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why would they have talked about whose hair needs to be cut and who looks great with their long neck and shoulders exposed in this type of garment? Why would they have talked about all that stuff?
Yeah.
It would make no sense if they were just five randoms in that group, five randoms in that group, and five randoms in that group.
This is why we need to get Cherry Weston Pierce on to give us
some insight. Gone by this point, so she's not going to be any help.
She would have known.
We need to get somebody else, one of the people that were on it by this point.
Yeah.
But the other thing, here is something that I know you won't have known.
Yeah.
And anybody that's watched it.
The chances are pretty high, yeah.
Anybody that's watched it that is listening may not have noticed it either, but I am here, fear not, to enlighten you.
This is why we get you on.
That's right.
Otherwise it's just me, talking about my elbows. Yeah.
Talking about nothing really. But so through that whole time of the montage, the makeup and wardrobe montage where, you know, the girls are getting dressed and the camera's in there. Again, weird with this behind the scenes teenage girls getting dressed, cameras in bathrooms thing. It's so strange. And one of the girls is like, no, get away from me. It's so weird. But anyway, one of the things I noticed playing over the top of this montage is actually a song called Other Side of Love, which ultimately goes on to be on the debut Bardo album.
There you go.
And
how did you spot it?
because I know the song from the debut album. Right. So it's obviously like the sample version of the track, unless it is the final recorded version of the girls played back over it because it was edited, you know, much later maybe.
I don't know if this was edited much later. I think it was edited in camera.
You reckon it was edited on the fly? Yeah, it probably was.
When the guy started hitting record is what you saw, and when he stopped hitting, that was where the cut was.
You know? His version of editing was play pause, yeah.
Yep.
I think that was kind of interesting to see that. So they obviously already had all the songs, you know, I think there were 12 songs in the debut album. They obviously already had the songs, and it was about who's going to sing this part of that song, that part of that song, and that part of that song.
Right,
so it just kind of reinforces, really, you know, they were never looking for five individuals. They were never looking for five talents. They were never looking for five, you know, trained singers. You know, they were looking for five personalities who had the X factor, and hopefully they could sing, hopefully they could dance, and hopefully they had the right look and aesthetic and could kind of, you know, be a part of this group and gel with everybody. And so, you know, just to know now, looking back on it, you kind of think, oh, even this early on, they already had all the songs ready to go. They had everything ready to go. So at this point, it really is, watching it back, it really is out of the girls' hands.
Yeah, and it, this comes back to the Katie Underwood problem, which is why they keep saying, you know, she's an unexpected whatever, you know, because she doesn't fit the mold.
Great dancer, unexpected this, unexpected that. She improves every time. It comes back to that thing of, oh, well, she's clearly so talented.
But yeah, it's just hard to hide how good she is, you know. An issue to
fit her into a mold.
Yeah.
that's exactly my observation too. It's quite uncomfortable actually to watch now in hindsight.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the songs, like Empty Room, we hear over and over and over again. And it's, I had to, they get to the final auditions, which is basically supposed to be this performance, which they're doing in the town hall to basically the other contestants. And it feels really big and empty. And I had to sort of remind myself at this point while I was watching that, that this was like, other than maybe the Olympics, the biggest production of the year, I reckon.
It's huge.
And there they were, like standing on this dull little stage lit by some fluoro lights, you know, in front of this old mangy green town hall curtain. They're singing into mics as part of it, but they haven't like run what's going through the mics into the cameras. It's coming out, it's just being pumped out into the hall. And it's like, it's not that hard to run a cable into the system, honestly. And it's just the,
it does. Yeah. It sounds so tinny, and the audio sounds so tinny, doesn't it?
Yeah, it made me embarrassed to be Australian for a little while.
Yeah, it definitely, there was no production quality, you know, no production value in that setup for those girls. And it really was just five mic stands, microphones, not at all, you know, no testing, no levels, nothing was done beforehand. You can kind of tell because I think at one point, I think Belinda's singing and at one point you can't hear her and then her vocals kick in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like really strange. Whoever was operating the sound forgot to turn her mic up, and so they're quickly like, quick, she's singing.
Oops, she's singing. Flick. Yeah. It's so weird. The other thing that I was thinking was weird was there are in a couple of the – so you sort of hear, you know, a good bit of each group's song, and a couple of girls in two groups sings – like tries to do trills and, you know, vocal runs and tries to really show off. And they both get canned.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know if that's just because of they were never going to get in or if it's because, you know, look, we're not looking for a show off. We're not looking for a star to outshine the others. Don't, this is not about you. It's about a collective group.
Yeah, gotcha.
I read into it now.
One of them's definitely quite off key. I think that might have been part of the problem. Yeah, there's this great shot, you know, because they're showing, you know, the contestants up there on the stage performing, and then they sort of cut to the judges at one point, and Michael Napoli has, like, both his hands on the top of his head, like, grabbing his hair as if he's sort of thinking, like, what have I done? How long am I going to be stuck, like, working with these people? And when can I go back and hang out with Ratcat, the Sharp and Boom Crash Opera, you know?
That's exactly what it is. He's sort of, his hands are literally clasped on top of his head, and he's shaking his head like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into? That's exactly what the look on his face is. It's really, really interesting to sort of be watching.
He's got his career in politics already planned out of his, you know, he started in that moment planning his career in the Liberal National Party or wherever he is. Yeah. And then
what else did you notice about some of the girls that ultimately get in the band?
Well, I mean, for starters, Sophie Monk's very tall. Like when they're breaking everyone into groups, I don't know if she's wearing what are those big platform things with the heels that everyone was wearing at the time, but she looks like she's about
heels.
Those things. Yeah. She's standing about a foot and a half taller than the rest of the people in her group at that point, I think.
Well, it's also because she's, for the angles you see Sophie, generally she's in the forefront of the lens too, I think.
Right, yeah, they've pushed her towards the front, do you reckon?
That could also be it.
Yeah. And then it's hard because they're doing group work. It's not like they're singling out. They're concentrating a bit more on the people that they're sort of letting go in this episode. So it's not like you're seeing all these individual performances. So, I can't even think which group Tiffany or Belinda was in. You know?
They were in the group together, so that tells you a lot.
Okay, yeah.
About that group.
And I was, to be honest, the song was just driving me so mad that I was like not concentrating. I was just gritting my teeth.
Did you hate it that much?
Well, you know, I had to listen to it afterwards, and the like the real thing, it's sort of like generic club, a bit of a Latino beat, which was popular at the time.
Yeah, sort of
thing. So I think even like that hasn't really stuck in my head as much as Poison has. I don't know. It's just, it's like the, it's fine, but it's not something that I've had on repeat since.
I think the ultimate finished version of Empty Room that goes on to be the B-side on the Poison single is, in a way, a lot more commercial than Poison.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that ultimately was their debut single and number one. But I think, yeah, Empty Room, the finished version with all the editing and the production and the tuning and everything, I think it actually is a really, you know, strong single. Obviously, they chose Poison, which is great because we love Poison. And it maybe gave the girls a better chance to kind of show themselves off separately. Mm. Whereas, you know, Empty Room, I think, is really just like a Sally and Katie.
Yeah. Vehicle. And it's so, it's just quite generic house music that I think was, the market was just flooded with it at that time. So yeah, it would have been really hard to get that kind of thing to stick out at that point.
Whereas, I think so too.
Yeah, Poison's a bit like, there's a bit, it's a bit funky and
yeah,
edgy.
It's a bit and, grimier. And yeah. I think at the Empty Room, when Katie's singing in the final production of it, it actually sounds not dissimilar to kind of the stuff that Katie Underwood did herself later on.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I can kind of see that for her in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I'd struggle to think of what Katie Underwood did afterwards other than, was it Disco Montoya, Inigo Montoya? What is it?
Disco Montego.
That's it, yeah.
She featured as a vocalist on two Disco Montego tracks. She also had her own single, Danger,
which
was fantastic, and I think you would actually appreciate it. I also have it on CD single. I might have been one of the only people that bought it. And she also featured on a track with Mr. Timothy, the DJ, called Be Together. And it was so good. It was it was such a good club song. They used to play it all the time at the Prince nightclub in Melbourne. I don't even know if Prince is still there anymore, but it was such a vibe back in the day. I think it was Mr. Timothy, the DJ. But it was fabulous. And I can't believe you don't know any of those Katie Underwood songs.
I was just thinking she could have almost, if she, you know, sliding doors moment, she could have gone on to be the next Sia or something like that. Because it sounds like a very similar trajectory.
Yeah, I look 100%. Yeah. I think so too. She definitely could have.
But I don't quite know. Yeah, I don't know if I don't really.
Maybe just we need to get Katie Underwood on to speak to her about it.
We do, don't we? Because actually, a lot of what I remember her for afterwards was like being interviewed for, like, as a, is it a pundit? Is that the right words? Like she,
like a social commentator
on
morning television.
Yeah, and they'd get her on to like comment on something, or they'd have her on a Good News Week or something like that that was on at the time. And she,
they tried to do a show. They tried to do a show. I don't know which network, maybe Seven, tried to do a show called Thorpe's Angels.
Oh, right.
And it was Ian Thorpe and three women. And one of them was Katie Underwood. And I can't think. I think one of them was Simone Cassell, who was an actress.
Okay.
And somebody else. Was it maybe Jackie O as well, I think. Maybe. Right. I can't remember.
Thorpe's Angels, God.
And it was, you know.
That Ian rings Thorpe. Such a faint bell in my memory, but I don't
I
know
think,
how you.
I think that's what it was. Or maybe it was called, I think it was called Thorpe's Angels or Undercover Angels or, yeah, Ian Thorpe's Angels or something like that. And I think it was Jackie O and Katie Underwood and Simone Cassell, or Kessel. I'm not sure how to say her surname. And she was an actress.
Can I guess what it was about?
Sure.
Do you remember? You remember what it was about?
I think I remember what it was about without actually knowing, I think.
Okay. My guess would be they were trying to cash in on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And so they'd go around to people's house and turn them into, I don't know.
No, I think it was more like, I think it was more like doing nice things for people. Like, you know, a lady needed, I don't know, like a single mum needed $1,000 for something. And you know, Jackie O or Katie Underwood or Simone would turn up and give them $1,000 and bring in somebody to help them with something.
Right.
You know,
more like a Jim will fix it sort of thing.
Yeah. And like, you know, somebody's.
By U Tree Productions.
Yeah. Somebody like, you know, oh, she's lost her confidence. You know, she needs help. We're going to give her a suit. And, you know, Katie Underwood knocks on her door and we're going to give her a suit and some confidence lessons or something. That's my memory of it. But look, I mean, look, this, I don't think it was on air for very long. I think it was only a very short-lived run, and I'm really talking out my ass. I should probably do some Googling before I speak. Again, we're going to have to issue corrections about this show. It probably wasn't even Jackie O. I'm probably making that up as well.
Probably wasn't even Thorpey.
Probably wasn't even Katie Underwood.
Oh, yeah, God. You're thinking of the 7:30 report. Anyway. Yeah. It was funny watching this now. It really occurred to me how young everyone was. Like, Cherry looks really, really tiny. And then at the end when Chris Moss is giving a pep talk to everybody, there's this close-up of Tiffany.
Yes.
And she looks so baby-faced.
She does.
What I was thinking, like, I'm not saying like, oh, you know, everyone's so young, but it was more that I was even younger. And I looked up to these people as like these gods because they were on television, you know.
You're absolutely right.
Funny how the perspective sort of flips around.
You're absolutely right. Like, I was thinking the same thing when at the very end, Chris Moss, you kind of see this moment of Chris Moss sitting in a meeting room with all the girls in the final 10, and they're all reading over what I presume is some kind of production deal or some kind of record label deal or some kind of...
He's trying to talk them into a dodgy contract.
Basically. And, you know, kind of letting them know what their life is going to be like. And you get a close-up of Tiffany, who kind of looks at the camera and kind of pulls a bit of a face like, you know, this is really boring or whatever. And you get snippets of Sophie and some of the others kind of listening with their arms folded, like intently, all these young women who really, you know, as you say, they're all so young. You know, I think Belinda was 24. I think she was the oldest person in the group by that point, and maybe Tiffany was sort of 23, but Sophie I think was 19. Right. You know, these are really young people, and you make a really good point. Like, you know, you and
so
I
she's
watching
like four
it,
years older than us.
Exactly. Yeah. You and I watching like 15, 16, and actually they go on with national television. All of a sudden they seem so much older, but actually they were just a couple of years older than us, like old enough to be our brother or sister. I mean, actually, literally old enough to be your brother and my sister, you know, actually.
Yeah.
So quite strange to watch it now thinking, oh, they really were quite, they were little babies. And also crazy to think by the end of it, you know, the final 10, they're kind of corralled into a room with Chris Moss and, you know, other people, presumably from the label, talking about what to expect
some
when their life will change. Pardon?
Some chaperones.
You know, talking about what's going to happen with their life will change. You know, I think at one point he mentions, you know, boyfriends not being a reality and, you know, having a personal life. And I think, you know, the schedule is punishing and it's a lot less glamorous than you think. You know, entertainment is a lot less glamorous than you think. And, you know, never truer words been spoken. Those poor young women.
Well, they've just been hanging out with Michael Knapp for life for 2 weeks. So they already know, don't worry.
Well, this is why I think maybe by this point in the process, it's gone from being a Michael Knapp for life controlled process to being a Chris Moss Warner controlled project.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because at this point, you know, this episode, the way that Chris Moss is about Cherry at the beginning of the episode and then here at the end with the final 10, you know, kind of giving them some harsh truths, some harsh realities of being under contract with a major record label. It is kind of interesting to hear it because it really feels a little bit ominous when you hear it now. You think, oh, gosh, these poor young women are going to be sort of sent out to the firing line, really. You know, they're going to sort of be the troops on the ground, and it's quite scary, really.
Yeah. And they already get sent out as well, like randomly. They all go down to Bondi or Coogee or something and they're forced to play like beach volleyball in their bikinis.
Oh, yeah, that was so weird. I was wondering if that was added then or if it was added, like if it was already filmed before that whole thing was done, because as if they would have been handed their record label contracts and said, oh, well, guys, we're going to keep you and go and play volleyball.
It looks like they were doing like just a media shoot that was randomly happening the next day, and you know,
it's a new idea or something.
Yeah, exactly. They ran out of things to cut into the show, so
I think so too. I think that's exactly what it was. It was so staged, and you know, it's so weird to see them. Like, you just think now, gosh, we would never ever put if this show was being filmed again, we wouldn't put young women in bikinis on Bondi playing volleyball.
Not for a music contest.
Not for a music contest.
Like, there are shows still going that are like all about that, aren't there? Like, isn't
that what? They certainly are. But we wouldn't do it for a music contest. And I think that's so strange to think, like, and then that was the photo that went, I remember it being in the newspaper. I remember the photo being, you know, in New Idea and different magazines and stuff. And I remember thinking, this is actually really quite strange.
Yeah.
Like, they're in their bikinis.
Yeah. for no apparent reason.
I mean, Sophie and Katie, I think, are wearing sarongs. They have the right idea. Good girls. They're not letting people take advantage of them, the new idea camera crew that is sitting behind the actual production crew.
I feel like we say this quite a lot, but I'm really excited now just to keep on watching and get to the next episode, because we're down to the really juicy nuts and bolts and we're about to meet the final band, you know.
Me too. I want to get to know the girls a little bit better. Again, yeah. I want to become reacquainted with the girls, and I also can't wait for us to get through the series so we can talk about some of the songs on the album, the first album and the second album. So I'm really excited about that. I just kind of can't wait. So we're going to have to, you know, smash through some of these so that I can have my fill, my bardo fill.
Well, and, I'm definitely up for it.
Yeah, me too, me too. And in the meantime, people listening at home or wherever you are, we have an Instagram, so send us a DM, flop us a like. Alex,
flop us a like.
Putting stupid words into the teleprompter, flop us a like.
That's still in there from last time, you may recall. You can also, if you just love what we're doing, which of course you should be, and if you've made it this far into the episode, I question you if you're hating it. Anyway, follow the link in the description of our podcast, of this very episode you're listening to our Acast support page, where you can send us a little bit of cash by means of a way of saying thank you.
And don't forget that our shows are published every Friday with mini-sodes on Tuesday. We still haven't figured out what to call our mini-sodes, so we are open to your suggestions.
Please write in.
And they're just a little early in the week snippet to kind of wet your whistle before the big kahuna is dropped on Friday.
It's just like a little 15-minute, you know, because I know you'll be missing hearing from us if it's only every Friday. So there's just a little tidbit, nothing to do really with the main pop stars project. But I have fun doing them.
and I have fun being a victim of whatever it is that you're putting me through in that mini-sode.
And, you know, as they say in this very episode, next week, all will be revealed. Who are the five pop stars? I wish I had a low voice. I'd really love, because it's money for old rope if you can get, you know, a gig doing some voiceovers. But I've high, like, children's voice.
Voiceovers, for those of you listening, voiceovers is great money. And actually, you know what? My voice isn't that deep, but for doing voiceovers, you really drop your voice right down really, really, really deep, right in your boots.
You come close to the mic.
And, you know, next week we find out who will be the five pop stars, and it's right down here. Actually, I sound like a local newsreader, so that...
You've got the low growly register that I don't have, you know.
Yeah, I do. If anybody in the market for a low growly register, maybe I should put that on my resume.
Low growly, yeah. Well, you should change your name.
What, to low growly?
Yeah.
Maybe that could be my drag name.
Low growly, I love it.
Low growly.
Okay, well, until next time, low growly.
Until next time. All right, have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Can you feel it?
It's quite early for me.
Hmm?
We've started.
Oh. Sorry. I thought you were playing the long credits, or were we starting with just talking this time?
Yeah, well, we always do. We start with talking, and then the theme song plays after we've finished shitting on about nothing.
Oh, yeah. Hang on a minute.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.